Welcome to Breakpoint Podcast, breaking down the world of tennis with your hosts, Val Febbo and Joel Frucci.
Roland Garros is edging ever closer and the players are honing their skills once again on the red clay of Europe. This is Breakpoint Podcast. I'm your host, Val Febbo, and joining me as he always does to talk a little bit of tennis, which we love, Joel Frucci. Joel, how are you?
I'm going well, Val. I'm feeling nice and tip-top. I actually made myself really, really nice dinner tonight, and I was wrapped with it.
I was going to ask you how this went. Now, you did text me today and said you were making Moroccan meatballs, which is something that I can admit that I've never eaten in my life. So how did that go?
Fantastic.
Oh, that's what I like to hear.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I'm making it again. Meatballs are fantastic. Nice and spicy. Really got that kind of Marrakesh flavor. and then I bought a hand blender on the weekend. So I made a yogurt mint sauce, and it was very, very nice. So I think I'll be making it again. And tell you what, though, it was very on theme because Morocco's got some clay courts, and we're going to be talking about clay courts today.
Yeah, they certainly do. There was a tournament over in Marrakesh a few weeks ago, which I think it was Casper Ruud ended up getting the job done there. So I'll have to search that one up just to make sure, because I have forgotten there's been a lot of tournaments in between. But it's been a really interesting, I think, since our last show where we kind of discussed Miami a little bit. It's been really interesting to see where tennis is heading and where it is going for the rest of the season. And in Marrakesh, it was Roberto Carballes Baena who took the job, who took the title there. So it wasn't Casper Ruud. He won that week in Estoril. So I was thinking of a different tournament. But yeah, it has been really interesting. Daniil Medvedev cemented himself as the form player of the ATP. And we'll start with the men before we get to the women and Iga Swiatek's ominous form ahead of Roland Garros. But it looked as though Carlos Alcaraz was seemingly in an unbeatable spot. But Daniil Medvedev got the chocolates in Miami, beat Jannik Sinner in the final, who defeated Alcaraz in an epic semi, which would urge anybody to continuously go back and watch those highlights as they'll be played for years and years on end. But then you head to the clay, and this is where the preparation for Roland Garros commences. We get three tournaments in Houston, Marrakesh, Estoril. Estoril probably giving us the most indication of where the contenders might come for Roland Garros. And Casper Ruud won there, finalist at Roland Garros last year. So that makes sense. Even though he has been in a bit of a form slump, it's been a bit of a hangover from an epic 2022. That I think he would agree with that. But then you go to Monte Carlo and you see the likes of Andrei Rublev finally hoist that elusive Masters 1000 trophy, which I think everybody was happy for, because he does have a heart of gold, as we have seen time and time again. Holger Rune starting to assert himself as a bona fide top 10 player. He reaches the final. Jannik Sinner, another semi. Taylor Fritz playing really well on the clay. And then you head towards Barcelona, where Carlos Alcaraz wins yet again over Stefanos Tsitsipas. Lorenzo Musetti putting himself in the frame a little bit with a semi in Barcelona, a quarter in Monte Carlo, and now we head to Madrid. So Madrid is one where I think we can really look and see, okay, conditions are a little bit different, but I think that we can have, I reckon we'll have enough of an idea once we get to Rome of where the tour is sitting. And I think when we look at the men's Madrid draw so far, an extended Madrid draw, a draw of 96 players as opposed to the 56 that have previously been in the draw. Now, Carlos Alcaraz looking very good, had a tough first match against Emil Ruusuvuori, but then he's overcome Dimitrov in straight sets and he obliterated Alexander Zverev in the final, in the fourth round. And that was a rematch of last year's final. Alcaraz won that 6-1, 6-2. Kachanov is next in the quarters. Then it's Altmaier or Čorić in the semis. And then on the bottom half of the draw, you've got Tsitsipas v. Struff and Qizhen Zhang, the first Chinese man ever to make a Masters 1000 quarterfinal, against Aslan Karatsev, who knocked off Daniil Medvedev. Now, we don't expect Daniil Medvedev to do anything major on the clay. I think a quarterfinal at Roland Garros is probably reasonable for him to think, and that's his best performance there. And I think with the form he's in, Joel, I think he gets there. But you look at all of these other players in the respective draws for both the ATP and the WTA, and the ATP, and I'm genuinely at a loss now for what might happen at the French Open outside that Alcaraz will do very, very well. Now, before we get to Djokovic and Nadal and where they sit, what have your thoughts been of the clay season so far?
Well, it's felt like quite an even clay court season so far. You know, there's been a few players that have kind of stood out. There are some that have really shown what we thought they might show for a while. Like Lorenzo Musetti had a really good run in Monte Carlo. You mentioned Andre Rublev before. It was great to see him get up in Monte Carlo. And Holger Rune has been a real standout too. And he was another name that you mentioned, final in Monte Carlo and also winner in Munich. So he's maybe one that I'll be looking to. And I think it's really important little run for him, because I think he's in that phase where he's really kind of showing people what he can do and establishing himself on every surface. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he can do at the French. But yeah, I mean, for me, no one's kind of really stood out head and shoulders above anyone else on the ATP so far this clay season. I think, yeah, I mean, Carlos Alcaraz is clearly the one that we're all looking at going into Roland Garros. And, I'm sure we'll get on to Rafa and Novak Djokovic and where they sit in things, because whenever we get to this time of the year, we're always talking about, it's probably Rafa's to lose and who can challenge Rafa, because for the past nearly decade and a half, you're crazy to go against Rafa leading into Roland Garros. But of course, this time around, a couple of injuries creeping in, and we know that he's not getting any older. Beg your pardon, he's not getting any younger. Even then, I guess we wait and see how he pulls up for the event. But I don't know. I feel like it's really anyone's game a little bit at the moment. Even some of the names that you mentioned there, Taylor Fritz, he's having a great season.
Yeah.
And Casper Ruud, we know what he can do on clay as well. Probably hasn't been his best season from what we've seen so far, but we know that it's his best surface. So yeah, it's an interesting one, but I like it. It's throw a blanket over quite a few men here.
And you're exactly right. There is a blanket over them. I think Alcaraz is by far the standalone. He's the one that,
at the moment, yes.
And he deserves to go into Roland Garros as the favorite for the tournament. I think his body of work has shown that. I think what he did in Barcelona was mightily impressive. And now he's coming to Madrid riding a pretty big wave of form. But the injuries, we don't know what's going to happen there. He's only lost the one match on clay so far this season. That was to Cam Norrie in the final of Rio, but we know what happened there with the injury to his legs. So I'm not sure what the go is there. He took another bit of time off after Miami, so missed Monte Carlo, but now back in Barcelona, won there, looking very, very good to go back-to-back in Madrid, and I don't think Steph or anybody in that draw is going to be able to stop him. We'll talk more about Madrid soon and some of the narratives there, but I think he's got to be the top. Casper, I know the body of work he put together last year should hold him in good stead, but I think he's in amidst, as I said, of a successful year hangover. We talk about in AFL circles the premiership hangover. Well, Casper Ruud had a mammoth year in 2022, and I think not having as much of a rest at the end of the season to go travel with Rafa and play for the Nadal Foundation, I think that hurt him. But, you know, when you're with your idol and your idol asks you to come and travel around the world and play exhibition matches, you're not going to say no. And I don't blame him for saying yes.
Yeah, exactly right.
So no issues there. Now, speaking of his idol, Rafael Nadal, hip injury, Novak Djokovic, and he says elbow injury. But Novak, in the last few years, has notoriously been subpar in Monte Carlo, in, you know, the events that have been in Belgrade, and then heading into Madrid. But once Novak hits Rome, that's when we see peak Djokovic. The conditions are similar. It's a couple of weeks before the French Open commences, and Djokovic tends to step it up around that time. So, yes, we haven't had that sample size from him that we usually might normally get. The loss to Musetti at Monte Carlo was a little eye-opening.
And it was a surprise.
Well, it certainly was. And then losing to Dusan Lajovic in Bosnia, I think that was even more of a surprise.
That was
there.
A bigger surprise.
Massive surprise. Now, Lajovic went on to win the tournament, so good on him. But I think I'm not sure where either of the two sit. Now, Nadal, you just can't rule him out of the French. You just can't. But we haven't seen him on clay yet, and he's been practicing at his academy. But I genuinely, I'm going to say it, I'm ruling him out. I don't think Rafa can. I don't think Rafa can win this French Open. He's on zero matches since Melbourne. You can't physically. If he does, he wins the French, he could probably lay claim to becoming the GOAT. If he wins it off no matches. That would take something miraculous and something monumental.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I think the thing is with Rafa, I mean, even though, okay, maybe he's running on minimal matches at the moment, and we don't know just how much of an effect the injuries might have, but, I think the history speaks for itself. And at this point of his career, I think it's the same for Novak Djokovic, really. Even sort of without the sample size leading into these events, I think these guys have kind of earned the right almost to go into these events and sort of earn their place as a favorite without sort of doing the hard yards coming in. Obviously, it's ideal for any player coming into a Grand Slam to have a bit of mileage under the belt, but I think these two guys are a rare exception. So, look, it's not too much of a concern for me. I think it's really just about how, how the bodies are feeling.
Yeah.
In the week or so leading into the event, particularly with Rafa, I guess I'm not as worried about Novak. I mean, we know what his track record is like with recovering from injuries, but obviously Rafa's missed a bit more time with injury, so he's probably the bigger concern of the two. But look, I mean, for me, the lack of matches isn't a concern. And especially with Rafa, this is his stage. This is his stage. I don't think we really need to sort of worry about a lack of matches for him.
Yeah, it is. But at his age, I tend to think, and we saw a wounded Nadal at the Australian Open. He was wounded, and it was awful to watch. Because this is a guy that is a warrior, and when he won in 2022, it was a warrior-like performance, and it was only a shadow of that that we got in Melbourne, and he hasn't played since that loss to Mackenzie McDonald. So, I think it's a worry. Novak, I'm not concerned about. Look, I think there's not much of a sample size, but if he plays Rome, he's going deep. He always does. Rome is one that Novak pencils in. And we always see success. Even in 2020, he came out, he beat Schwartzman in the final. I think he won Rome last year as well. So Rome is the one for Djokovic that I think he's going to push. If he plays, he's fine. So that's the big one for me. So I reckon if you're seeding it now in terms of favoritism, and I'll get your top five in terms of your favorites for the men, for Roland Garros on the men's side. We'll do the same for the women. I think Alcaraz has to be one. Djokovic 2. I'm probably putting Rune at 3 at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
With the way that he's been playing. I'm putting Tsitsipas at 4 and Ruud at 5. I don't have Nadal in there. I just don't think. If he does it, I'm very glad for him to prove me wrong. But I don't think. And I'm even ignoring Jannik Sinner and the form that he's been in. I think he's very, very unlucky, and so is Rublev, to miss out. But yeah, I think those are the guys that'll push. And Sinner will probably be another one that goes deep in the tournament. He's primed and he's ready and he's having some sort of a season. So who are yours?
Yeah, he is. Look, got to go Carlos as well. with the season that he's had and the environment that he will be in. Novak, I think, has to be in there.
Yep.
I'm gonna back Rafa in, to be honest. Yep. Maybe I'm insane at the age that he's at, but I think he's earned his spot in the favoritism for Roland Garros, and will do until he retires, whenever that is. I'm gonna throw Taylor Fritz in there, actually.
Okay, yep.
I mean, I know that clay is not his best surface, but he's having a good year and he's performed pretty solidly so far.
Yep.
In clay season. So I'm gonna throw him in there. And this fifth spot, I'm still kind of dabbling with, but look, I think I'm gonna have to agree with you, Val. Holger Rune has really put his best foot forward on the surface. He's having a really good run. So I think he's probably earning the stripes so far. So I'll back him in as part of the top five here.
Yeah, and look, I think that if there were players having a tad more consistent of seasons, I would probably back them over Tsitsipas, because I don't think he's got the mental capacity to beat Carlos or Novak or Rafa on this surface.
Certainly not Novak.
Well, we've seen that. And then Carlos has dominated him, absolutely dominated him. What he did in that Barcelona final was nothing short of magnificent. He just put together a perfect match, and the drop shots were so perfectly executed. He's just a master of clay. He's a master of hard. Grass is the only one for Carlos that I think he needs to get a little bit better at. And look, he's only 19 years old. He turns 20. He turns 20 over the next few days. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. And the one I think that we both left out there was Daniil Medvedev. Now, before we do get to finalizing Madrid, what do we think happens with our old Russian mate? Because we love him. We want him to go deep in tournaments. I love what he brings to the sport. But on the clay surface, the red dirt, I don't think he's anything to be worried about for any of those big guys.
Oh, look, I wouldn't rule him out entirely. I mean, we know that he doesn't have, I guess, the greatest affinity with clay. But he's in pretty good touch at the moment. And if it's a bit of a trend, he's kind of kissed and made up with some of the courts that he's, you know, not necessarily liked in the past, like center court at Indian Wells.
Oh, geez.
So maybe if that's anything to go by, maybe he'll continue it at Roland Garros. Who knows? I mean, is it enough to have him as, I guess, part of our top five favorites? I'm not necessarily sure yet. But that said, like looking back to who I picked, I mean, I've gone with someone like Taylor Fritz, who, you know, traditionally clay hasn't been his favorite surface. So I mean, it can be done. It can be done, and he's in good enough form to do it. So yeah, I'm not going to say no.
And Daniel, the meme lord, he'll probably come out, hear this, and go, you know what? Screw it. I'm winning Roland Garros. And he'll come out and win it. Yeah. That's a very Daniel thing to do. Out of nowhere, he'll just storm through. And he's the form player of the competition of the ATP with Alcaraz at the moment. But he is out in Madrid, lost to Aslan Karatsev, who made his Maiden Masters 1000 quarterfinal. It's a weird draw, because going for a semifinal will be Jijian Zhang against Aslan Karatsev, who qualified for this tournament. And Zhang is the first Chinese man to make a Masters 1000 quarterfinal, which is unbelievable. Then you have Jan-Lennard Struff, who, with Daniel Altmaier, both of them became the third and fourth lucky losers to progress to a... Or they could become the third and fourth lucky losers to progress to a Masters 1000 semifinal, which is just unbelievable. Only two players have done it in history. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. So Altmaier versus Chorich. Chorich outlasting Alejandro Davidovich Fokina in a 3.5-hour epic. And then you've got Alcaraz against Khachanov. Now, that's probably the pick of the matches at the moment, but I think Alcaraz gets that one done pretty quickly. I think Chorich gets through to a semi. I reckon Tsitsipas probably goes through to the final with the bottom half of the draw, and we could be set up for another Carlos versus Steph final.
Yeah, I think so. Look, I mean, that's the way that it's looking for me at the moment. It's pretty hard to look past it, and that's no disrespect to the rest of the field. There's some great stories in there. But yeah, look, I mean, it's difficult to look past Carlos and Steph.
It really is. And I think the body of work, and I've said that a lot tonight, but they have put together a sensational body over the last, what, 3 months or 4 months on the clay. So yeah, I think it's going to be those two. But yeah, we move to Rome next week where Rafa scheduled to play. Don't know if he will. Djokovic scheduled to play Alcaraz, Tsitsipas. It's going to be a pretty heavy draw. So looking forward to that one as well. We do have plenty more to get through. We're going to talk about the women's draw in Madrid and also the lead up to Roland Garros and who are the big players. We'll give our top five initial seeds for who we think will compete for the Roland Garros title after this on Breakpoint Podcast.
Follow Breakpoint on social media, on Twitter and Instagram, at Breakpoint Podcast. Search us on Facebook and subscribe to the show on your favourite podcast platform.
You're listening to Breakpoint Podcast. Val Febbo and Joel Frucci here with you talking all things tennis in the lead up to Roland Garros. It's been a while since we've done a show. I've missed you, Joel. So I'm really, really enjoying this tonight. It's been absolutely fantastic talking tennis with you.
Yeah, it has. I mean, yeah, we actually haven't done a show for a while, but
we've seen each other up on meatballs. Yeah, well, yeah, true. Maybe we need to have some meatballs and then do a show in person as well. That could be.
I think so.
That could be.
I'll make them for you next time, mate.
Beautiful. Sounds good. No, we have seen each other in the meantime, but just haven't done a show. So, I've been really looking forward to this all week, but. Look, the women's draw in Madrid and the women's tour leading into Roland Garros, we haven't had a sample size, really, of anything. We've had one European clay court tournament, and that was a week and a half ago in Stuttgart. And Iga Swiatek continues to assert her dominance on the tour. She got the job done over Aryna Sabalenka, 6-3, 6-4, in the final there in Germany. But she got through relatively unscathed. Karolina Pliskova gave her a little bit of a scare in the quarterfinals, but she continues to look dominant. Sabalenka continuing her solid run of form. The way she's playing has been sensational this year, and I think she got to the final of Indian Wells and then did okay, made the quarters in Miami, so pretty good sunshine double there. And the way she's going about her business, I wouldn't be surprised to see her go the distance at the French. I think the one that we haven't really seen too much of has been Elena Rybakina on the clay. Yeah. So I wonder what we're going to get when she steps out, because she is probably up there with the form players of 2023. But from your initial thoughts, what are they at the moment and where do you sit with the women?
Yeah, well, I think, clearly, let's just get it straight out. I mean, it's hard to look past Iga Swiatek at the moment. I mean, it's really been the same all year. We've kind of seen like what the kryptonite is with Iga now, and it's really that kind of power hitting that Sabalenka and Rybakina can bring. But I'm not so sure that's necessarily gonna hold up on clay. I guess no pun intended there, because the ball actually probably will hold up. I think the other women that have stood out so far, I think Ons Jabeur is another one, Paola Badosa, Jessie Pegula, and also Belinda Bencic. She had a good run in Charleston to the final and then succumbed to Ons. So I like what she's been able to produce so far. They're probably my five though, but it's good. I mean, like the men, I think it's again a pretty open field with the women, with the exception of Iga being sort of all the way out in front. I am really interested though to see how Sabalenka and Rybakina go at the French, just to see if they can or if their games can convert on the surface.
Yeah, I'm interested too, and I think Aryna is the one that what she has done so far this year has just been, she's been so good. Finally winning that Grand Slam title, but her best result at Roland Garros is a third round, and she's done that the last 3 years. So that's the big one for her. This is the Grand Slam where she's had the least amount of success. She's made the semis at all the other three. This is the one now where she needs to really cement herself as that all-court player at all four majors, where she's going to be a threat everywhere. But I'm not sure yet whether she will be. It's really, and we talk about throwing a blanket over the men for the first time in a long time. It's continuously the case with the women. So it's really exciting. And Iga, again, she's the outlier. She was so dominant last year. She's continued to be so dominant this year at times, but she has been fallible at points. And Alina Rybakina has been able to be that kryptonite on a few occasions.
I think going into the clay, I think the variety that Iga has in her game really just, I mean, it sets her apart really anywhere, but I think it kind of sort of really sets her apart on clay. And then we know that, you know, the surface kind of nullifies, I guess, the power of the likes of Sabalenka and Rybakina and probably Jessie Pegula as well to an extent. So, yeah, I think those are the two things that will probably set her apart at Roland Garros.
Yeah, I think so. And you look at the angles that she can create and just the change of pace in her shots. I think that's the most impressive part of her game and how she can just absorb anything that comes at her on this red dirt. And it's mightily impressive. So Iga, I think she's got to be the outlier. And there are so many just nipping at her heels, waiting for that opportunity to get over the top of her. And let's look at our top five seeds currently that we feel are the best five chances at winning Roland Garros on the WTA. So I'll start with you, Joel. Who are your top five here that you think are going to really take the tournament by the scruff of the neck?
Yeah, well, we sort of went over it a bit before, but I think, Iga, in no particular order, Iga, Jessie Pegula, Ons Jabeur, Belinda Bencic.
Bencic is a good one.
Yeah, no, I think Bencic is... he's gonna do well here. And I think, finally, Paola Badosa.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think Paola's definitely one that she's looking in pretty good form herself. You know, the clay, she's probably grown up on it playing in Spain, and she looks at home when she does play in Madrid. So, the way she goes about her business is very admirable. And, she's a very, very good, exponent for the sport of tennis. But mine... I think I have to go Świątek at one. Pegula probably at two. I'll go with Jessie at number two.
Yep.
Three, Maria Sakkari.
Oh, yeah.
Who beat Paola Badosa in Madrid, and she's got form at Roland Garros.
Yep.
Four, Aryna Sabalenka. I think this is the one where she really pulls it together. And five, it's really, really hard, but I think I'm going to have to agree with you. I think Paola Badosa. I think she's the one that I think can really go deep at this tournament. We've seen what she can do in the rankings. We've seen how high she can go, the quality of tennis that she can produce. I think she's the one as well that can go deep at the French. And I reckon all five of those could have one hand on the trophy already, and they're probably going to be yanking it away from each other at certain points throughout the tournament. But looking at Madrid, heading into Rome always gives us the best indication of where players are at because the conditions are so similar to that of Paris. Madrid, a little bit higher in altitude, the ball bounces higher than what it does in Rome and Paris and Monte Carlo. So this is where we can get a little bit, this is where the power hitters do tend to be a little bit better. And the more neutral players are a little bit better, the better hardcore players. And this is the clay court tournament that Federer had the most success at. He won Madrid on clay a couple of times. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this transpires. And if we look at the tournament, Świątek versus Martic, Pegula and Kudermetova are playing at the moment in the quarterfinals at Madrid, as we do record here, Joel. And Kudermetova, she was up a break, but now it's 3-3 on serve in the opening set. So the number three seed getting the job done and breaking back. So it's Sakkari against Sabalenka. That's one of the semifinals. Really looking forward to that one, and both of them showing great form and exhibiting some expert clay court tennis at the moment.
Yeah, they are. So it's going to be it's an interesting sort of final part of the draw in Madrid, actually.
It's less open than what the men's is.
Yeah, it is actually. It's sort of much more I don't know, I guess expected in a sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, really fascinated if Jesse Pegula gets up in the end against Veronika Kudermetova. And as you said, at the time of recording, they're playing, as we speak, Wednesday night Australian time. But yeah, it'll be a good little sample size if Iga can get over Petra Martic and we get Iga up against Jesse Pegula. You know, sort of a bit of a sample size about the power game versus Iga on clay. So, yeah, interesting. And then, Sakkari versus Sabalenka really speaks for itself.
Yes, it certainly does. And I'm really looking forward to that contest. It's going to be a cracker. But, yeah, I think this tournament has I think the biggest story, and it has to be Mira Andreeva, turned 16 in her win over Magda Linette. To get through to the fourth round. And it is just such a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful story. And it's just, I'm honestly, I still cannot believe that she did it, to be honest. So she was born in April 2007, April 12. Hang on, I've got it right here. April 29, 2007. That's after
2007. Oh my goodness!
After Roger and Rafa.
2007.
I know,
that is insane.
That's after Roger and Rafa had won a combined 12 slams, Joel.
Oh,
the Fidel rivalry
2007,
was
2007.
I know. 2007. I know.
What?
I was 11, so that makes me feel old. God. I was in year six, Yeah, we both were. We were bordering on middle school. What else happened in 2007? Bloody, that was, John Howard was still prime minister at that point. So that's something that likens the two of us. But, it's quite unbelievable what she was able to put together in Madrid. She knocked over Leila Fernandez in straight sets, Beatriz Haddad-Maia in straight sets, Magda Linette in straight sets, and then unfortunately went down to Arena Sabalenka 6-3, 6-1. But her comments during the week... she turned 16 during the tournament, and she said that, you know, it's so surreal. And then you're in the cafeteria and you see Andy Murray walk in, and he's so beautiful. And then Murray responded with, she's going to be wonderful, but she needs to get her eyes checked.
Ah, that's classic, Andy.
Yeah, it certainly is. But no, it's an amazing story what she and what she was able to do. But 16 years old, what were you like? What were we doing at 16?
Oh, geez,
nothing.
Scratching my butt doing math homework.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably
more like scratching my head because I had no idea what maths. I still don't really know much about maths. I'm shocking. That's why we're doing this. But it's just so unbelievable, and hats off to her for what she's done. And yeah, I think Madrid has shown that that women's tennis is in a pretty good spot for the next 10 to 15 years at the moment. But there is some other news that has happened throughout the week, Joel. Roger Federer, Serena Williams, Matteo Berrettini, and a whole host of other tennis players and athletes and famous people were at the Met Gala. Serena is pregnant again, so that probably means she's done. No more tennis for her.
I think so.
I think the retirement is done. Unless she decides to come back, which I highly, highly doubt. But, good to see a whole host of tennis players at the Met Gala talking with each other, conversing, enjoying each other's company. Novak Djokovic, he's playing in the US Open. It has been confirmed. They said it would be confirmed in May. And here it is. Djokovic has been allowed entry into the United States where he wasn't in March for Indian Wells and Miami. This was completely expected. And it's just another slam that Djokovic can go forth and try to win.
Yep. And obviously his record at the US Open isn't quite as good as Melbourne Park, but nevertheless, similar surface conditions, a little bit different, but Djokovic on hard court.
Hard debate. Very, 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 very hard debate. So, yeah, they're the two major bits of news from the week in tennis or from the past fortnight in tennis. And, Joel, it is time for our favourite segment of the week, favourite segment of the show, really, because it's the only proper one that we have. And I make that joke every week, and I need to be a little bit more original. But the Benoit of the week, who are we giving it to? In honor of our favorite enigmatic Frenchman, Benoit Paire. It can either be a good one, it can be a bad one.
Yeah.
What are we doing this week?
That's part of the fun. This is a good Benoit. We're going to give it to... Fells love you. We're going to give it to a friend of the show, Chris O'Connell.
Ah, nice. Yes.
So he had a fantastic run in Munich, made the semifinals where he got beaten by Holger Rune. So nothing to be ashamed of there for Chris. Fantastic run. Flavio Caboli in the quarterfinals.
Yep.
Good run from Flavio there, actually, as a qualifier. But wins against Alexander Zverev.
Huge.
Yeah. Hugo Humbert as well. So some good names there. So congratulations to Chris on that fantastic run.
Yeah, certainly. He's having a wonderful clay court season. Even got through to the second round in Madrid for a Masters 1000 win. So he's playing some sensational tennis and finally getting his body right. And he's showing what he can do on the ATP Tour. And how good are we, Joel, that an ATP semifinal consisted of Breakpoint podcast guests in Munich? Because it was Holger Rune and Chris O'Connell. And I was really happy for us, more so than the two players, because of, you know, that's a bigger achievement for us, really, considering we started this show in the back studio of a university. So I will well and truly take that. But that is,
and you know what that is, Val? You know what that is?
What is that?
Das ist gut. Because it was in Germany, get it?
Oh, man, if only you knew that, if all the listeners knew the two of us and where that joke comes from Family Guy. If you haven't seen it, look up Das ist gut. It's very, very funny. But you have to really like Family Guy. It's one of those obscure ones, but it's very, very good. We do love it. And Das war's gut. Das was a good night with you, Joel. And I look forward to doing it very, very soon in the lead up to Roland Garros, because we are well and truly getting ready for these late nights. Roland Garros is almost upon us. Then Wimbledon, and then we can kind of relax a little bit more. But the late nights are well and truly upon us with this European summer and this European swing that we so love.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's it's good for us in Australia to have the afternoon session, early evening for us. So French Open, oui.
He's got all the accents. Look how multilingual Joel has become since he moved out of home and he's living by himself. Look, I'm so proud of you, Joel.
You got German, you got French, you got Moroccan meatballs. I'm the full kick and boodle.
You are the full package. You just need to make some nachos and then you've got the Mexican flavor as well. So I'm... Por qué no las dos? Val Ferber and Joel Ferrucci joining you on Breakpoint Podcast. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Breakpoint Podcast on Instagram. Twitter is Breakpoint Pod, Facebook, Breakpoint Podcast, and get us on Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever you get your podcasts from. We are there. So make sure you tune in and subscribe every week. We'll catch you soon in the lead up to the French Open.